Hey guys, I'm Mark Potter. Welcome to another episode of Brushstrokes, a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. Guys, today's episode is brought to you by my friends at GPA. As you may know, we are in the midst of constant evolution. Ideas, technology are all swirling around. GPA has been transforming itself for decades. They are now a leader when it comes to substrates. They believe that the substrate is part of the design and not just the vehicle for design. When it comes to coated papers, uncoated papers, specialty fine papers, C1S, C2S, pre-converted substrates, and all kinds of different substrates for digital presses, GPA is where you want to go. Go to askgpa.com for all your substrate solution needs. Guys, today's conversation is a really, really special one. I'm really excited about it. It is with a woman by the name of Amy K. Hutchins. You heard that right. Her name is Amy K. And we even talk about the story in terms of how she got that name. But more importantly is, Amy K. is a great speaker and a fabulous author. She wrote a book called The Secrets Leaders Keep. And I read it cover to cover, and it resonated with me. It was stories about leaders and basically their insecurities. So it resonated with all of us, right? It's something that we all have. We all operate with insecurities. We all have vulnerabilities. And so we tend to put these leaders on pedestals, or if we're in leadership positions, we think we've got to be this statue of success. And that's really, really not the case. It's okay to be human. The biggest takeaway from my conversation, and I'll let you listen to it here in a minute, is her whole idea that your clients, your marketplace, has to become the hero of the story. Too often in today's world, we feel like we're the hero of our own story. We're tweeting and we're putting stuff on Instagram and we're self-promoting, and it kind of goes hand in hand with this whole product-centric thing where the product is the hero of the story, or our company is the hero of the story. It's not the case. And she had this epiphany years ago about figuring out, listen, that my clients are the heroes of the story. It doesn't mean that you can't do some self-promotion, but it's your marketplace, your community, that becomes the hero of the story. So I think you'll really, really enjoy this conversation. And I am really appreciative of you taking the time to listen to this podcast. So without further ado, listen to my conversation with Amy K. Hutchins. Take care. Is this Amy K?
Well, Mark, happy Monday.
How are you?
I'm excellent, sir. How are you?
I'm good. I'm really good. It's a little rainy. Are you? I'm on the East Coast. Where are you?
I'm San Diego.
Oh, so it's sunny and 72, right?
Pretty much. I hate to say that, but yes. Are you? In the Atlanta area?
I'm in Pittsburgh, actually. Beautiful,
oh,
yeah,
okay.
Beautiful Western Pennsylvania. But my kids were born in Southern California. We were in Redondo Beach, and so.
Oh, you totally know where I am.
Oh yeah, I mean, 72 and sunny, even on Christmas Day, you could go out and, walk on the strand. So, yeah, I get it. I totally get it. It's a great place.
Yeah, I feel blessed to call it home. I was born and raised on the East Coast, Washington, D.C., and then I lived in Atlanta for years. And so coming out here was sort of like, people work out here? Like, yes, they do. So it's like, okay, I'm staying. It's all good.
That's right. That's right. Well, I really appreciate you taking some time.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I tell you, I read your book and I just thought, it's so cool, and I'm going to get to it in a second and talk to you a little bit about, but we got to first talk about the name, Amy K.
Oh, God, I wish I had, well, if you have my parents' old school ancient voicemail machine, you know, I always get announced as a Mike. A Mike is calling. Mike. But I have been truly, I have been mispronounced my whole life. But my grandmother gave it to me. I wish I had some incredible story, but they took the middle initial Kathleen, they slid it over, attached it, kept it capitalized. And I have been Amy Kay my entire life.
Oh, that's so cool. That's a good story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. No. And my grandmother was lovely. She's long since gone, but just a really kind of cool cat herself. And so there is a long story about me being late. And like, she was just like, okay, she's definitely going to make her presence known when she finally gets her act together. Because I was very, very late.
Oh, so, that's cool.
But yeah, so it's really cool. Thanks for asking.
Yeah. Grandmothers are the best. They're so important, you know? I mean, they...
Yeah, they really are.
They give us roots and they give us stories. And, you know, my kids are... That's part of why we came back to Western Pennsylvania was because, you know, my mother's here. And as she gets a little older, it's important that, you know, there's some connection there. So that's cool. That's a good story.
No, that is good. And what's your path? What's kind of your story arc?
Well, this podcast is basically a derivative of a magazine that I've been doing for 11 years called Canvas Magazine, and it's for printing and the marketing services industry. And as you can imagine, and I'd love to get your take on all of it, the world, if you will, in terms of reinvention. And you know, if you go back, think about it. So I started 11 years ago. I used to run marketing for a large organization in the industry. And I went off. I had to kind of do this thing and change the world. And you know, of course, the recession hit. And, you know, that was, you know, oh, gosh, you think that's a tough time. But it probably was the best thing because it was forced transition. Everybody was... had to rethink who they were, whether it was a business, whether it was, you know, a 40 or 50 year old person that's been in the business for a while. I mean, and so that's kind of what we've been preaching is, and if you think about the printing industry, which was born in the industrial age and still kind of acts out of that recipe, you know, we were saying, look, you've got to be defined by your clients and not what you do. And so we've been kind of preaching that message. And so out of that, we've ended up doing a whole bunch of, you know, we do a lot of custom content. And that's probably why your book started to resonate with me, because it was rooted in storytelling. And so that's kind of what we've been doing. And that's what the business is. And it's been a lot of fun. And you know, a podcast is just another vehicle for that. And you know, you come across interesting people and you say, you know, and this whole thing is, you know, we want to just hear your story and your insight. And it's been great. We have a really robust readership and just been blessed in that respect.
Oh, awesome. Oh, that's so cool. Well, I can't tell you how privileged I am to be a part of it and to be invited today. So thank you.
Yeah, cool. I appreciate it. Well, tell me. So, all right. So this book, I mean, The Secrets Leaders Keep, tell me, it's so interesting how you wrote it. I mean, you get into it and you start to go, God, these people are being pretty vulnerable. You know, they're sharing some real, what you say, secrets. But I mean, so was that the whole idea or did it kind of morph out of that? Like, I'm going to go talk to people. And then did you find this vulnerability from these people?
Now, do you want me to save that for the podcast? Or do you want me to tell you now?
We are podcasting right now, right?
God, I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. I just say, you know what? It's casual is the best way to go. We're just chatting. And so
oh, my God, that's hysterical. So you've been recording the whole time, and I'm sitting here loud. Okay, all right.
Yeah, I'll take out all your...
You can edit this, though.
Okay. I'll take out all your swear words and stuff like that.
I was just saying, oh, that's so funny. Okay. I didn't realize we were rolling yet. I'm so sorry. I thought we were doing the pre-warm up here.
Oh, no, no. I like to, you know what? Like I said, we told Manny, it's really casual and we can edit obviously, but it's so much fun to just chat and get your perspective.
All right,
so
cool.
Really
casual.
You
want to ask me your question again then, so I don't have to make you edit it.
Yes.
Quite so hard.
Yeah. So, the stories, the thing that was so compelling to me was that you found a vulnerability within the people you wrote about, and they kind of shared. It just seemed very, very I don't know the best word, but vulnerable. And I wondered if that was just something that you said, I'm going to capture that, or that it just started to unmask itself that way.
No, it was actually a very conscious decision. So the stories are totally made up. These people don't actually exist. These are creative amalgamations that I wrote. But it wasn't how the book started. And so one of the things that's kind of funny is that I wrote this book that was all about like the 10 steps to being a great leader, like pretty much off the PowerPoint classic presentation.
Yeah.
And what I realized, Mark, is that it just sucked. I mean, it was just terrible. It was one of those books where it was like, it wasn't that the book itself had like bad content. It was just one of those things where it was like, this is out there. There's 1,001 books on how to be a better leader, like rah, rah, sis, boom, bah. And what I really wanted to do after working with leaders for 20-some years was to say leadership is ridiculously hard. I mean, it is crazy hard.
Right.
And we're all suffering together. We're all sharing these secrets that, you know, ironically enough, if we shared them, they're really not that secret. And so that's what these 14 stories do, is they capture the vulnerability, the difficulty of leadership, how hard we are on ourselves. And so it's not like I made up any of the secrets. The secrets are things I've seen for over 20 years. I just put them together and all these different leaders that I've also had the privilege of working with for so many years. And then I just like, I took, okay, well, let me take leader XYZ and FPQ and put them into one story.
Right.
And so that's what I did.
Yeah.
And it resonated like people totally wrote this about me. And I'm like, actually, I didn't, but the fact that you're identifying with it makes me feel so good.
Well, I mean, I'm going to tell you, I thought you were just kind of hiding the characters. Like, that's a testimony to the writing and the stories. Cause I mean, I bought in, I was like, oh, this is so cool. I mean, you know, you're talking like the VP of marketing, and it's on, you know, realizes that the blind date, you know, is actually, I mean, that's the person that was giving her the grief about the perfume and all that kind of stuff was actually the blind date. It was really, really compelling. And I think the message, I'm assuming the message is that, listen, you know, leaders are people too. And we sometimes we put them on a pedestal. I get, you know, it's funny. I tell you this story. I remember my kid was younger and I there was a minister. He was having some issues in school or something like that. And the local minister, I went to him and I wanted to ask him a couple questions and he dismissed me. And, as if to say, you know, I'm really busy right now, and it bummed me out. And my mother, mm-hmm. talking about grandmothers, my mother said to me, you know, sometimes these people in these high places, we put them on pedestals, but they're people too. And so that's kind of what I pulled from your stories, that I'm sure you've worked with all these people, but yeah, they are people too, and they do have those insecurities. It's really kind of refreshing to see.
They do. And, you know, that actually reminds me of something I hadn't thought about in years. You're taking me way back. My first job before I ever went corporate was to be an elementary school teacher. Oh. And you just reminded me that one time I was at like the local mall. We're going way back to the 80s. But one of the kids that I taught, a fifth grader, you know, saw me at the mall. And the expression on his face was like, you live outside the classroom. You could just see the look on his face. And I remember laughing, thinking, yes, I am a human being too. But it was such a mind blow for this poor little kid who was like, oh my God, she actually doesn't live in the 4 cement walls where I learned my mathematics. But yeah, it's very similar to what we do to leaders. We see them at the office or we see them on TV. And it's not that we forgive egregious behavior. It's more about understanding that leadership is a journey. And one of the things that Meacham, who's just a brilliant writer, brilliant presidential historian, I think he's just an amazing mind. But Meacham says leaders learn on the job. Like we expect them to show up and have it all figured out, and they just don't. They're human beings, and they're learning every single week. The problem is that their mistakes and their missteps are, you know, headline news all the time. And again, doesn't mean we don't hold them accountable for egregious behavior. It just means that sometimes, you know, we got to remember, okay, they're learning every single day.
Yeah. There's something that drives them, you know, I assume. But I think that's really compelling because, you know, they're almost okay. I don't know. I mean, on some level, they're okay with themselves, or at least they have a level of hope, faith, whatever they can you define it, that allows them to go for it. Because it's kind of like, you know, they jump off the cliff and build their wings on the way down, and they've got, I don't know if it's guts or what have you, but it seems like they have insecurities, but they're not, at least based on what I've read, is that they're not letting their insecurities control them. Is that true?
Yes. I think that's one of the things that I've noticed over the years, is that to me, like, the number one thing that, like, well, let's go back for a second. Just because you're a leader doesn't mean you're a brilliant one. All right. So let's just full stop right there. You know, just because you have the title doesn't mean you actually have the skill sets to fulfill the position. But the most brilliant leaders that I will say anecdotally that I've studied or I've researched or I've personally witnessed, the number one thing that sets them from, like, really mediocre or just good leaders is self-awareness. It's their ability to say, okay, I recognize and understand emotions in myself and others. I use this awareness to manage my own behaviors and my relationships. And that level, you know, at the end of the day, that's emotional intelligence. But that to me is a true game changer for a leader. Like, when you are just self-aware, when you know how to manage yourself, when you know how to manage others, you use that to manifest the right and appropriate behaviors and to make sure that your relationships are healthy. You know, that's where you just rise above all others.
Yeah. What are the bad leaders doing? You know, what, I mean, I'm sure.
Oh, they're self-absorbed, they're immature, they're insecure. I mean, you know, the list goes on and on and on.
Yeah.
What they haven't done though is, they haven't taken the time, and this is a mature step, they haven't taken the time to figure out who they are and realize they don't have to pretend to be perfect. They don't have to pretend to be, you know, all figured out and the smartest person in the room. In fact, one of the things that I encourage leaders to do is to remember that their job is not necessarily to have the answer. Their job is to harness the intelligence of the people around them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big differentiator. And that puts you in the room as a facilitator and a guide. So here's a great way to put it. This is maybe more concrete. One of the biggest things that changed the way I run my business, the way that I changed even my marketing and the way that we go to market, is I had an epiphany just recently. And by recently, I mean in the last few years, because we've been doing this a long time. Mm-hmm. Somebody looked at me and they said, "You are not the hero. Your followers and your customers, they are the hero." He says, we've been telling people, build your personal brand, build your personal brand. And then they mistake that for saying you are the hero. Leaders aren't the hero. Leaders are the actually wise guy on the side. So a really, like, a cool way to put it is, it's not Luke Skywalker, it's Yoda. And so, like, in a more current example is, everybody wants to go out and be like Katniss Everdeen from The Hunger Games. Like, all these people are like, I want to be Katniss. And if you take this model and you're like, no. You truly, as the hero of your company, as the hero for your customers, as the hero for your followers, you're Haymitch. You're Woody Harrelson. That's your role. Your role is not to be Katniss. Make your customer Katniss. Make your followers Katniss. And like, to me, when I heard that, I mean, I'm giving you my own movie example because I'm a movie buff, but when I heard that you're not the hero, you're the wise guy on the side, it was like this huge light bulb went off and I was like, oh my God. And I will tell you that doing all of the jujitsu on our marketing material and the way that we model what it is that we teach about leadership, it's been a game changer.
Yeah. Well, and it, God, is that cathartic or what? Because, I mean, because let's face it, and maybe I'm assuming you agree with this, we've lived in the last, gosh, decade or two with this idea. I mean, you know, there's been such pressure on the short-term performance and profit, and you know, you've got social networks, which is self-promoting. I mean, it's not just, you know, the pressure at the top on the numbers, but you've got a I don't want to focus on generations, because it's really, everybody is impacted by technology, which is, you know, look at me, Facebook, and, you know, everybody is putting that out there, that you've almost got this culture of me going on. And yet, I mean, what really is enriching is when you go to bat for others. And so, I mean, I'm in, like, I get it, but boy, does everybody get it? I can't imagine they do, right?
No, and I think And I think at some point the pendulum will swing again. I mean, I don't want to be a hypocrite. I mean, if you were to go look at what we post on Instagram or Facebook or LinkedIn or all these other platforms, you know, I show up a lot because I'm building a brand. I am a speaker. You know, I'm a business consultant. I'm teaching online courses. I want you to know about me. What I have found, though, is that when I talk less about me and I talk more about you, right, and how you can be a better dragon slayer, how you can go out and play bigger, better, and bolder, when I put the spotlight on you, I get much more engagement. I get a very different visceral reaction. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, it's interesting. I was saying this the other day, and I know I'm kind of ping-pong. That's how my brain works. But, you know, there's so much noise out there. And it's really, I love social media. I really do. I think social media has been a wonderful advancement for social causes, for supporting others, for being able to respond more accurately and more quickly. I also think it's dangerous. I think it's dangerous for people who are already suffering from low self-esteem, who are feeling insecure. I know that there's more anti-anxiety prescription drugs ever than in the history of the United States than there are right now. And that's not a judgment. That's not a comment. That's just a fact.
Right.
And I think that social media is contributing to it, that we're feeling more insecure. We're, Teddy Roosevelt said it best a long time ago. He said, comparison is the thief of joy.
Yeah.
And I totally agree with that. And that's really all social media is right now.
Yeah.
There's just so much noise and so much comparison of these, you know, these highlights of people's lives and just everybody thinking like, oh my gosh, I just can't keep up. I just can't do it all. I'm just not good enough. I don't have enough. And that really spirals pretty quickly to a deep, dark place for a lot of people. And so that's actually in the book. I think that, you know, one of the stories in the book that you read, from The Secrets Leaders Keep, is about the comparison condition and how it can really undermine our own potential.
Oh, yeah. Well, and it's funny because I love that quote, and I've used it multiple times with my kids. And you're right. I agree with you in that the social networks, and so I'm not, I wouldn't condemn them because they're all tools. You know, there's no tool there's no tool that can be good or bad by itself. It comes from where it emanates. It's the motivation. It's
correct.
You know, what's your purpose? What's your method? So for you to build a brand, for example, as long as that brand is, you know, supporting the heroes, which is your marketplace, your client list, I think that's great. I think I'd like to think that's kind of what we're doing too. And is that, you know, the heroes of our world are these people who are have generations of business in their background, and yet, you know, are looking to say, how do I thrive? How do I persevere and make a living going forward? Because things have changed so much. And so you've talked a little bit about dealing with change in the book too. And I wonder, you know, have you seen, because it's, we don't really have a great, you can't go back in history and say, oh, we have a time just like this that we can look at. And so, you know, the leaders are the ones who've got to say, okay, are we committed to the process? Are we committed to our marketplace? Does that allow us to change? I mean, do you see that kind of DNA in leaders?
Well, I see that in the brilliant ones that are all also looking at change as a constant question. And that question is, out of all the changes that are happening, out of all the shifts that are going on around the world, what's relevant? And the most brilliant leaders will ask that, Mark. They will ask what's relevant. You know, one of the myths that I talk about from stage is that we have this huge myth that people fear change. That's just like this moniker, this trite phrase that we hear all the time. Ooh, people fear change. It's actually not true. It's not true at all. People crave change. We love change. What we fear about change isn't the change itself. It's the idea and the question of, is this change going to set me up for success? Is this going to be positive? In other words, if I were to say to you, your whole next year in 2019 is going to change because you're going to have 200,000 more viewers, you'd be excited about that. You'd be like, oh my God, bring it, right? We're constantly looking for new movies, new restaurants, new places to travel, things that, you know, stimulate our brain. So it's a myth that we fear change. What we fear is whether or not we're going to be successful. And so the really brilliant leaders aren't out there resisting change. They're just constantly saying, out of all the changes that are happening, what's relevant for us? And so a great example is to look at Amazon and the drone testing that they're doing in the UK right now. I think this is just kind of a fun example. So in the UK right now, literally right now as we are taping this podcast, the drones in Amazon in the United Kingdom are saying, okay, we're going to test this model that you can get a delivery in under 30 minutes. Now, the rest of the world experiences, you know, Prime membership is 48 hours.
Right.
But now they've gotten it down to where you've got a cold, you order some cold medicine, it's going to be at your doorstep in 30 minutes. Well, the guy that's building a house in the middle of the United States says, that has nothing to do with me. And I say, it has everything to do with you because it's changing customer expectations.
Right.
So when the world shifts and all of a sudden I can get most of the things that give me short-term gratification in under 30 minutes, it doesn't mean you're going to build a house in under 30 minutes. It means that expectations for everything in terms of a delivery time are going to be shortened. So
right.
you can't let the other builders figure out how to do it faster and better and let you just say, oh, that has nothing to do with me. No. How is this going to be relevant to me? And that's what, you know, that's what the bright leaders are constantly asking.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's and it's overwhelming, though, at sometimes, right? I mean, because you do feel like, I think the great leaders do, they say, you know, if there's opportunity, it just, like you said earlier, sometimes there's a lot of noise. It's sifting, being able to sift through what are truly opportunities.
Yep.
And so you've got to be, you know, really, really educated. And so, you know, I struggle with that. You know, it's the same thing. Like, you make the change, you're right. I love it. And quite honestly, you know, I think the world's been rigged in a way that you're supposed to embrace risk and just go for it. What's the worst thing that can happen? You know, I'll go move in with my mother if I have to. She won't like that, but you know, but sifting through and being able to figure out, you know, where the opportunities are. You know, before I ask you a couple of other questions, so give me your chronology, because you've had this, just to set the ground. So the history, and you said you've been working with, you know, leaders for 20 some odd years. Give me a little background on Amy Kay.
Well, I have the DNA of teacher in me. So everything that I do is about teaching and learning. I'm just crazy curious. I've been a curious learner my whole life. And so I started off as an elementary school teacher, and then I became an elementary school teacher trainer. And then I got into training about brain-based classrooms. And then I became a corporate sales trainer. And then I became a corporate, like, operational leadership trainer. And then the next thing I know, I start my own training company. And then, you know, here I am today, where I'm still teaching. I teach from stage. I'm a speaker that travels all around the globe. I do about 120 events a year on average, and I'm like that classic keynote conference. I'm either sales, innovation, leadership, that's it, or we're teaching our online leadership courses, and or I'm writing books that are still trying to teach people how to play better. So at the end of the day, I always say, just picture me with a piece of chalk in my hand, because that's like the way I came into the world.
Right. And so when you do these speaking engagements, it's one thing because they're all sitting there and hanging on every word. And I'm sure that you use story
yes.
and analogies to convey the message. You know, what do you learn from those events? What have you, over the course of time and maybe even as of late, what are you learning from the audience, and what do you see that maybe is a little different than maybe 10 years ago?
Oh my gosh, so much. This could be like 5 hours. You know, one of the things, and I find human beings fascinating. I really do. And my grad degree is in brain science, cognitive behavior, how we learn, how we process information. And I truly do believe that human beings are fascinating. And so I'm constantly learning about human behavior. I'm learning about what resonates and what doesn't. You know, we're hardwired for story. We've been hardwired for story long before we had written language. We had oral historians. And so we're truly wired to, like, be hooked by that. And so, yeah, storytelling is a part of it. But what the audience is constantly teaching me, like on the surface, is their industry, how it works, how their world plays out. That's always fun to me to like start in working in a new industry because that's stimulating to me. What I'm also finding is that human beings have far more in common than they have differences. And we all struggle with very similar struggles. The context might be different, but it's sort of like going to the movie. You've got these genres. You got horror, you got action, you got rom-com, you know, you got all these different genres, but the same story arc pretty much exists in every single movie. Just the characters change, the challenges change, the scenery changes, but they're all dealing with the same conflicts. And that's what makes the movie so popular because we identify with it. And it's no different as a speaker. I think that, you know, I talk about leadership, but I'm talking about their struggles. And so people will come to me and they'll be like, oh my God, how long have you worked in the automotive industry? Never. How long have you worked in like the widget industry or the aerospace or aeronautical industry? And no, I haven't. But what I talk about is so relevant to them as a human being who's just struggling to figure it out, which we all are.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think that's fascinating because I think that we're kind of in a different time. And I'm curious on your perspective in terms of how the times have changed, right? Because I'll be blatantly honest and say I've literally pushed this concept that the industrial age is over, but that we're still using industrial age recipes for engagement with our communities, you know, the heroes, if you will. And so that's why I think, you know, the publishing and the story creation process is so critical. But I do feel like, you know, we've got a country, maybe even leadership principles that are still rooted back in that industrial age. And I wondered if maybe, you know, those people that walk up to you after the presentation or in your research or all your clients that you've dealt with, if you see some of these people that, you know, maybe they're good people, but their leadership style is still rooted or conditioned by that industrial age. And yet here we are in this new age, which is, I don't know, call it the connection age or the conceptual age or whatever you want to call it. I mean, it demands a different recipe, does it not?
It does. And I think that you've hit it. You've just hit the nail on the head with what happens is it's kind of like survival of the fittest again, but this would be survival of the adaptive personality. And if you are willing to let go and not feel threatened that a skill set that you have is perhaps obsolete, there's a term that I call competency addiction. And that's really where we are right now, is we are with a bunch of, and I'm not being mean or critical. I'm just saying I'm giving like the state of the affairs. We are with an older generation now that is being bombarded with change in terms of technology and intellectual property and a sea of ideas. I mean, the amount of information that is coming, this is really the age of information. So if you want to say it's no longer the industrial age, I'd go, this is the age of information. It's overload. And so what you have is you have a bunch of bureaucrats, you have a bunch of old school leaders that say, well, let me tell you about what we did in 1965, or let me tell you what we did in 1978, or even, and this is more dangerous, what we did in 1992. And they still think it's relevant. And so what I will gently say to them is be very careful that you don't have a competency addiction. And they're like, what do you mean by that? I said, you're addicted to the competence that you had 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Right.
And what you did 10, 15, 20 years ago is what you're addicted to, but it's no longer working. And so we get a lot. Here's a great example. I cannot tell you how many times I walk into a think tank and the managers in the room will want to say, well, let's just start millennial bashing. And I'll be like, you know what? We're not going to do it because the millennials are awesome. And I said, you want to bash the millennials? You can bash a handful of them, but don't let the stereotype actually make you the bad guy. I said, we have to learn to adapt. They're no different than any other generation. Every generation brings opportunities. Every generation brings challenges. And so people will be like, well, you know, they don't even like want to show up at 5 o'clock. Okay, who said 5 o'clock was the most optimum time to be like sending out your e-blast anyway?
Right.
So instead of just getting caught up in what I call lazy thinking, the lazy thinking is, let me just bash this group of people. The more brilliant leader is going to stop and say, okay, there's a new player in town. How do we change the board game?
Yeah. Yeah.
How do we play better?
Right. Well, I mean, that's awesome stuff, because I think there's a, I don't know, have you ever read, the book is called Mindset. It's from Carol Dweck. And
I've not read it, but I've heard about it.
All right. So in that book, she talks about exactly, I mean, it's hysterical, because she talks about this like preschool or kindergarten test that they ran with jigsaw puzzles. And basically at the end of the day, they said, okay, they gave this jigsaw puzzle to these kids, and they had two different groups. And they asked the groups, they said, okay, you've done this first one. Now, what would you like to do? And I'm sorry, not two groups, but one set of people, and they had two different responses. And so they said, okay, what would you like to do? Would you like to do a harder jigsaw puzzle, or would you like to do the one you just did? Now, mind you, when they did the first one and they completed it, they got a bunch of pats on the back and attaboys and attagirls. Well, it was about 50-50. Some people chose naturally to say, you know, I already did that one. I want to do the next hard one. And so, but there were a group of kids that said, I want to do the same one. And it goes to your competency addiction. That, you know, mm-hmm. we like being competent. And so that's that combined with short-term pressures on numbers, you know, that goes back to your whole theory around change. And people, you know, they do crave change, but they also have these pressures or this internal compass, if you will, that says, you know, I really like to be good at what I'm doing. And so it sounds like you think, you know, leaders are the ones who are saying, you know, not, positive growth comes out of change. You know, we've got to embrace all this kind of stuff, right?
It does, but it's nuanced. And so this goes back to not only what they've done with children in research studies. University of Michigan is known for a couple of these famous ones, and obviously Dweck's bringing up this whole mindset around the puzzle. But leaders who sincerely and specifically praise for both effort and progress as well as results get people who are more willing to take on the next challenge.
Yeah.
And you can do that for yourself. And again, that comes back to emotional intelligence and being able to manage your own behaviors. And so when you have failure in your life, the people who are like, oh, I'm an idiot, they're not going to go take that next challenge. The person that says, oh, well, that sucked, and what did I learn from it? Okay, well, how would I do it better? Are the ones that in early childhood had somebody giving them praise for both effort and results. But when we praise people only for the result, you often get them not wanting to take the next challenge because they want to ensure it's like this, it's a juxtaposition of, so Mark, I give you a puzzle, you do really well, I praise you and I attaboy you, and then I ask you, do you want to try something harder? You're like, oh, but I only got praised for success. So no, let me do another easy one and you'll praise me again. If I praise you and I say, Mark, you did an awesome job. I love the way that you thought through the puzzle. I love the effort that you put. I loved your resiliency and your perseverance. You are an amazing thinker. You're a great problem solver. Now, do you want to solve a harder problem? Maybe I do.
So yeah.
It's a very complex scenario psychologically that's happening inside this little brain, this little mind.
Amy Kay, I think that's brilliant, right? I mean, I think you're and maybe it's more applicable than ever. I mean, that to sit there and, you know, because we do, right? And maybe that is a product of the industrial age. We simply praise and reward the result. You know, and maybe today's world, and look, let's face it, we're not making as many things in this country. And so critical thinking is a big deal. And so that's got to be, I was just about to ask you advice, but I mean, that's a big one to say, you know, how focused are you on results? Clearly, obviously results matter. I mean, you know, we've got to do that.
Oh, but, totally.
But you probably get that if you're focused more on the process, right?
Correct. And that's the thing that drives me crazy is that when I walk into businesses, and I won't say any names, but I've walked into some pretty large brands that ended up not being large, and you could just see the writing on the wall because they were so focused on the bottom line that it was like, okay, you guys need to step back and you need to realize that the bottom line is also a consequence of all the effort that's being managed in the first place. And so if all you're going to do is demand, like, it's a classic example. When people say sales are down, I never say sales are down just for some isolated reason. Mm-hmm. Sales are down is an unintended consequence of something else, but it's never the root cause. And so it's like, and again, sales teams will be like, huh? I'm like, sales are down, which means something else isn't happening. It's never the root cause. It is always an unintended consequence of something else.
Right.
Poor X, poor Y, poor Z. And they're like, oh, right. So it's like, okay, so let's go figure out what we need to turn around, X, Y, or Z, and then sales will go up. But when leaders just sit there and go, results are down, sales are bad, it's like, well, you aren't going to change anything with that mantra.
Mm-hmm. And not to keep going off on these tangents and take up all your time, but I'm fascinated by this.
So this is fun. I'm a geek. This is totally fun.
Yeah, the when you think about those leaders and they think about, okay, where sales are down. And they ask the questions. I mean, I go back to what you said earlier about making your clients or your marketplace the heroes of your story. You know, are enough leaders going back and asking that question, right? I mean, we ask it internally. We say, we look at our, and then you have to do that. I mean, you look at the process internally, but are we going back and saying, do we know our clients well enough? Do we know the heroes of our story? Are they the heroes of our story? Do we know what's making them tick? How is their business changing? How is their needs and desires changing? I assume that's part of it. And they're not, there's a good number that are not asking that question.
I agree. I think that there are plenty of people who are, and there are plenty of people who are not. And, you know, it's interesting. It's kind of, it's the irony of what it is that I do. It's the irony of teaching. Like, if everybody knew everything, I'd be out of a job. Right. It's kind of like what you're doing. If everybody knew mm-hmm. how to play better, there'd be no reason to listen to your podcast. But this is a learning journey. And I think that that's one of the things that, again, makes this an extraordinary experience on the planet, is that if you're not open, if you're not curious, if you're not asking that bigger, better, bolder question of how the world is working and how you're working in it and how you're serving, then there's no really reason to get up tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And so every day is a chance for us to play better, to play bigger, to learn more, to be a better servant. And I think that there are plenty of people out there who are eager enough to say, okay, what am I still missing? Mm-hmm. What am I still not asking? And I think rather than judging to say, oh, some people are and some people aren't, I'd rather say, I think there are some people that are still curious, and that excites me and gives me hope.
Right. Well, so before I go, I'm going to ask you for a shameless plug, but I want to ask you, so, you know, your presentations these days and, you know, what do you, I guess I was going to ask you your advice, right? What advice do you have? Most of our industry is built up of smaller businesses, small mids. I mean, we have some, obviously some big powerhouse organizations and, you know, we do business with some big OEMs and, but for the most part, it's small to medium people who are in fact trying to define themselves by their clients or making them the heroes. But I was going to ask you what maybe the core of what you're presenting these days and or what that advice is to that group. I mean, if you said, look, a couple things that I certainly would be focused on in the near future would be X.
I would be focused on making sure that I'm investing in the people. And that sounds really fundamental and really simple because it is. Mm-hmm. I know that you're going to need more technology. You're going to need more cybersecurity. You're going to need more really and truly technological tools at your fingertips that are keeping you safe, keeping your information and your data. Cybersecurity is going to be dominant in the next few years. But I would also say that there's one investment that you can make as a leader that you will always get a return on investment from, and that is the investment in your own self-knowledge and your own self-awareness. And so if you don't have a budget and you just need to listen to a podcast, if you've got a small budget and you just want to pick up a book, if you've got a larger budget and you want to go on a course, you know, don't let the finances determine or limit your ability to say, I am still smart enough and savvy enough and worthy enough of continuing to invest in myself.
Yeah.
Because as a leader, every single day you influence so many other people that you owe it to constantly be improving yourself.
Yeah, that's a really cool point, because we think the leaders, like you said, they're supposed to have all the information. They're supposed to have all the answers. I know a guy, you know, I've got these kids and they play hockey and we go on these trips, and I was fortunate enough to have one of the other parents is a pretty successful guy. And it's funny, you know, while some of us, it's over the weekend, are sitting there drinking beers and trying to, you know, have some laughs, you know, you catch him reading books and educating himself. And I tease him, you know, that, you know, that he makes us feel less of a man, but part of it is, you know, I said, you know, and we laugh about it, but it is true. And it reminds me, I think that's something that, you know, especially in this technological age, we forget to read, we forget to do that stuff. So it's really interesting that you say great leaders should need to take care of themselves and be self-aware. You know, we think that they should be taking care of everybody else, but on some level, that self-awareness, that self-knowledge, as you say, is critical. So,
yeah, and I think that one of the things I'll leave you with too is I think that, you know, there's this whole preach and this whole platform out there for balance and finding balance. I think balance is a crock. I mean, I won't even go there. It's a different episode, but balance is a total crock. But I do believe in prioritization. And so I don't want to sound hypocritical in the sense that, you know, here we are saying, oh, you know, make your followers the hero. And then I turn around and say, invest in yourself. It's not an or situation. The conjunctive word in there is and. You know, I'm allowed to invest in myself and I can still make my followers the hero. There, it's not an either or. It's about figuring out that you can do some of these things. You'll have to switch priorities. You can't do it all at once. But like today, you're listening to a podcast. You're investing in yourself. Mm-hmm. But then you're going to go out and you're going to say, okay, and I'm going to take all this information so that I can play better and invest in my followers. And that's the beauty. Right there, if you want one simple game changer, start saying, okay, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to figure out how to do that. And yeah. I'm going to prioritize this right now, and then I'm going to shift. And it's no different. Like I had a woman the other day, a woman executive. She's like, I always feel like when I'm at work, I'm thinking about my kids. And when I'm with my kids, I'm thinking about my work. I was like, oh my gosh, you and 18 million other people. Yeah. I said, so just stop right now. Today you're prioritizing this, or in these few hours you're prioritizing this. Stop trying to balance it all and just start shifting your priorities and just yeah. focus on, hey, in this hour I'm an executive and in this hour I'm a mom. And tomorrow, you know, I'll be an exerciser. You don't have to fit it all in one day. You might try just trying to fit in a few more things in a week and give yourself a little bit more grace. And you could just kind of see the light bulb go off. She's like, oh my God, I totally get stressed just trying to be balanced. And I'm like, no kidding.
Yeah, that is
actually... It's just the wrong thing to pursue.
No, I think that's really good because I'm, you know, that's me. I mean, I think that's your next book. And, you know, I mean, honestly, that's a really big deal. Let's do this. So before you go, because you're working on a new one, right?
I am.
And you put a little excerpt in the back and give us the 411 on that. And then let us know where they can find you.
Okay. I actually have the most excited book about my next book is the book called How Might We? Mm. And How Might We is really and truly taking an optimistic and practical approach to harnessing the collective intelligence around us and realizing that as leaders, we don't have to do it all. We don't have to solve it all. But our job is to shine the light on other people's brilliance and harness that so that we can drive our businesses forward faster or our relationships in better directions. And so the How Might We, I'm very excited about as an inclusive problem-solving type book. And then
when's that coming out?
Our on... Well, I'm hoping in 2019.
Awesome.
It's slated for 2019. Yeah.
Okay.
So knock on wood, we'll make that happen.
Yep.
And then they can always find us at amyk.com. Mm-hmm. /BNL for Be a Natural Leader. So amyk.com is our main website, and amyk.com/BNL is always where we have our online programs on leadership. And it's where my passion is online. It's where I'm reaching more people. We have hundreds of people that go through our online courses with actual tangible, measurable results. So I get super passionate about that.
Well, I'm super passionate about all of your stuff. I'm really, really glad that I reached out and took a chance, and can't even thank you enough for taking this time. I am actually, you know, we've got some people that with your permission, that I might share you with. You know, we do business with some fairly large organizations, and you know, they do their own little conferences here and there. So if, with your permission, I may pass along your information, because I just think, I don't know, I think your message is spot on and really needed.
Oh, thank you. That means a lot. I would love to reach more people and collaborate more. So absolutely, Mark, that's awesome.
Cool. All right. Well, listen, I will stay in touch. If I get to Southern California, we will go have a cup of coffee or a cocktail or something, and we'll solve the world's troubles. But I just can't.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
It was a fun conversation.
Yeah, it was really, really wonderful. I can't wait to share it with everybody. So
thanks. Yeah, and when you're ready, let us know, because we'll share it with everybody we know.
So oh, absolutely.
When your podcast is ready, just heads up, and we will do social media blitz.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Amy Kay, thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Mark. Have a brilliant day. Have a brilliant rest of the week. And let us know if you need anything.
You got it. Take care.
All right. Be
See
good.
All righty. Bye. Well, guys, I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Amy Kay Hutchins. She was fabulous. It was a great opportunity to talk with her. I hope you took away what I took away, and that is that your marketplace, your clients need to be the hero of the story. And that we all have a little bit of vulnerability to us, that leadership really starts with yourself, constantly looking to grow, having that growth mindset. So all really, really compelling stuff. I think the big thing is, you know, talk is cheap. We've got to act on that. And I think that she would agree that, you know, the answers are simple, but executing it is harder. And so, but take that first step, you know, jump off the cliff and build your wings on the way down, and start making your clients the hero of your story. I'd like to thank Amy Kay once again. I'd also like to thank my friends at GPA for sponsoring this podcast. As you know, they have a fond place in my heart. They are a innovative organization. I think for all your specialty substrate solutions, you need to visit askgpa.com. They've been innovating for decades, and they have countless solutions for you. So my thanks to them. My thanks to you for listening. And until next time, be the buffalo. Take care.